Welcome to Why Am I Laughing? The podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast. Mi nombre es Ben Harris, and with me as always is my co-host RJ Sine.
10 a.m. Santa's coming to town.
We're your in-house comedy gurus who talk about what's funny, why it's funny, and how to be polite when you get a Christmas gift that you don't like.
Ooh. You just kind of got to grit your teeth and like that polite smile and be like, it's good.
It's gardening shears.
Oh, it's the thing that I wanted. Thank you, Grandma.
Aunt Phyllis, it's a sock sweater.
Thank you. I love it.
But for real. Today we're talking about National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation because it's that time of year and that movie is chock filled of comedy goodness. But before we get into it, boys and girls, RJ is going to take us through the wonderful world of comedy news.
It's a world of laughter, a world of tears.
Yeah. I remember that from times ago, but you know, if you had like the automatronic.
Take us a little news. Yeah.
So we had some Grammy-nominated comedy albums that you should check out over the holiday. Patton Oswalt was nominated for his comedy album. Margaret Cho, Tig Notaro, Amy Schumer, and David Cross. They all have very good stand-up albums this year. I highly recommend all of them. My personal favorite was Patton Oswalt's. His is also on Netflix. Margaret Cho, yeah, hers was really good. I also really like David Cross's Making America Great Again. He's really funny. He's Tobias in Arrested Development. So I'll check them all out. They're all different. They're all funny.
Top-notch laughs.
Oh, yeah. Cream of the crop.
Whoa.
Whoa. In musical news.
Whoa. Changing it up.
Changes. Changes.
Turn and face the strange.
Changes.
And touch me.
What?
Sorry. I forget the words.
I don't think that's part of the song.
I forgot.
In any version.
Yeah, it was a different version.
We can edit that out. Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig. No. Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig are developing a musical about musicals.
Oh.
Based on the book, Everything is Coming Up Profits, The Golden Age of Industrial Musicals, which is a book about how companies like GE, Exxon, Coca-Cola would actually hire Broadway talent for industrial shows to motivate the sales team or to educate employees on products.
So when you say actually, do you mean like not in real life?
No, I mean actually.
Like you mean literally actually.
Literally in the 1950s through the 80s, companies like Coca-Cola will hire Broadway singers from like Mary Poppins to sing Let's Go Fly a Kite to motivate their team or explain something.
Let's go drain some cola. So like Mary Poppins is this big review on Broadway and they go, hey, just stop your shows for a sec. Come to corporate headquarters in Boise, Idaho, and come to this meeting and sing Let's Go Fly a Kite.
Similar, they'd be like, hey, I heard you have a show coming up on Broadway, on Broadway, as our friends from Oh Hello would say, on Broadway. Come to our company, and whatever you have prepared, like, give us your best stuff. So even before the shows are out. They would hire these Broadway performers and writers and singers to do just like specific musicals for these companies. So
and then just like go get them, boys.
So Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig obviously read the book and decided let's turn this book into an actual musical.
That's amazing.
So I'm excited. I think Will Ferrell has amazing comedic musical ability, and Kristen Wiig. Yeah, I mean, if you've seen Garth and Kat, then you know she's going to be
great. She's a follower.
Yeah.
That's some excellent news. I'm excited for that. Let's get on with the show, though. The topic of the week is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Some brief history on that.
In 1989, National Lampoon cashed in on its third installment of the Vacation movies. Christmas Vacation, what started out as a short story for National Lampoon's magazine, turned into a full featured film from writer John Hughes. You know him from
Breakfast Club.
And
16 Candles.
And
Ferris Bueller's Day
Off. And
all the other National Lampoon movies.
Didn't he do Purdy in Pink?
Yeah.
There you go. He wrote the screenplays for the previous two films and then also wrote Christmas Vacation. The movie debuted.
Ooh. Yeah. Scary.
The movie debuted in opening box office weekend just behind Back to the Future 2. I'm sorry.
Ooh, a weird spin-off version of Back to the Future. Wherein the entire, where actually it's the opposite. It's an all African American cast, unlike the original film where there's no black people in it at all.
I think when they go back to the 50s, like the bartender is black.
And that's it.
So he's white in the other movie.
Yeah. What can I get you, Sonny?
Just behind Back to the Future 2, and then eventually went on to be number one in the box office. In the next few weeks, the film grossed over $71 million and is considered to this day to be a modern Christmas classic.
I would also add that it might be the last time they allowed in cinemas the ridiculously long intro animated credits.
Right, yeah.
Oh, where it was socially acceptable. You were like, oh yeah, this is in every movie. But like you did that in Elf and you were like, no one does that.
Right, right.
Get that out of here.
And like it had a song that was just like saying the name of the movie.
Yeah.
Christmas Vacation.
That was literally Christmas the only lyric.
Christmas Vacation.
Having a Christmas Vacation.
Give it on up for Christmas Vacation. Yeah. Makes
it's like,
sense.
What do you think? The audience is just like stoked eating half their bag of popcorn for 6 minutes. Like, oh my gosh, animated Santa. It has like nothing to do with the movie.
It's not true.
Okay.
It ties in deeply.
And we're going to tell you why.
That's right. Okay, but you know, we've talked about what the movie is, but we're not talking about why it's funny, RJ. Mm. And that really is the nucleus of this podcast.
Do tell.
This is why it's funny, ladies and gentlemen. Christmas Vacation pokes fun at the American Christmas traditions, Christmas themes, and just the family unit in general. It uses physical comedy, wordplay. It has zany characters, and it is carried on the back of a vintage Chevy Chase.
Ooh,
in
a crisp
rare
89
form.
Chevy Chase.
Oof. It goes down smooth every time. We love to see reflections of ourselves in movies and relate to these characters like Clark Griswold, who just wants to have a nice Christmas. He's just a family man who just wants to bring him together for Christmas and have everything go okay.
Yeah, that's a good premise, but...
But that's not what happens.
It doesn't last long. Foreshadowing. Bum, 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 bum.
I think, really, this is a disaster movie disguised as a comedy. Like
2012?
Like Godzilla.
Day After Tomorrow?
Yeah. It's... The disaster is not a world-ending snowstorm or a lizard coming out of the ocean.
Mm.
It's the parents. It's Aunt Bethany.
It's the racial tension in the room that you can cut with a knife.
It's Randy Quaid.
Yeah, buddy boy.
Oh my gosh. It's just family
it's the
showing
plethora
up.
Of domesticated animals running amok in one home.
It's just Christmas.
It's Julie Louis Dreyfus living next door. That's the best.
That is such a good little cameo.
Oh my gosh.
And Brian Doyle Murray.
Yeah.
He's the boss.
Bill Murray's brother.
His bigger brother.
Who has like the most unique voice ever.
Right?
I don't know what he wants. Like it's so weird to imitate.
I know.
But it sounds like he's like really straining himself.
Griswold. You listen to me, Griswold.
Because like, it's just... not like mobster, but right. It is like raspy down
like Griswold.
Griswold.
You sound like Roz.
Don't let it happen again.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Let's do Pixar.
What?
Let's do Pixar.
Like, why is Pixar funny?
Yeah. Or maybe not Pixar
like,
as a, in
one
general.
One movie is good. You can start with one.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Like
let's
the Toy Story franchise.
All the Toy Stories.
Yeah.
When is Toy Story 5 coming out? 4.
5?
4 for 4.
2020. I think Toy Story 4 got pushed to 2018.
Oh. I'm
not kidding.
We'll still be a podcast by then.
Oh. Spoiler alert.
You didn't know that?
Ben later would start his own podcast called Why Am I Sad?
Did we just jump back to the rest of development where you're being the narrator?
Ben never started his own podcast.
I don't remember what I was saying.
We went off the road about Julie Louis Dreyfus and Pixar and all that jazz. But I think what you were driving at there was how much the show's destruction value isn't about like this overwhelming thing, but it's all these little things internally within the story that is the disaster movie.
Yes, it's not about the menace is just the family. Noted by the fact that this is one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. I'm going to say that throughout the episode because the whole movie is my favorite part of the movie.
Ooh.
Is when the parents show up for the first time. And everyone's just like, Russ is watching a movie, somebody's in the bathroom, somebody's cooking, and it's just, you're seeing them all in their respective spaces, and then all of a sudden it's the doorbell. Ding dong.
Ding.
And then it cuts to the other one, and it's ding dong. And then it's like, push in on the front door, and it's like, it's like menacing. It's so perfect.
Well, they're a broken doorbell.
They're already... It's going out of batteries.
Yeah. It's all the electricity on the lights.
Those weren't on yet.
Oh. But yeah, let's break down some of the story in general. So I think that's a good groundwork. This is a disaster movie by a lot of means. It's very different than most Christmas movies. But essentially, we get a look at like 10 days with Clark Griswold and his family, right? During the month of December. And it's weird because... What keeps the plot moving forward isn't necessarily like some kind of, you know, conflict all coming to a close. It's like, it's just time. It's just life.
Right.
It's just the zaniness of the Griswold family, ridiculousness of whatever's happening in their life.
Yeah. Probably, I mean, besides just Christmas coming, probably the most plot that we have is that Clark is trying to put in a pool.
Yeah. Clark wants a pool with his Christmas bonus, and he wants his parents and his in-laws over for Christmas as well, which is weird because when they say that in the movie, you think, yeah, we all want to have our family over for Christmas, but he doesn't really fully flesh out that idea because what Clark really wants or doesn't say or doesn't realize or I don't know how this it never gets explained, the parents show up on the 14th of December.
Yes.
That's a full 11 days before Christmas. I never would want to spend 11 days straight, especially before Christmas. I mean, I love my family, but 11 days straight, all in the same home, like with all of my family? Like, what in the world?
They flew in. He lives in Chicago.
I know, but do that for the weekend before. Like, what was Christmas on a Wednesday? Like, I don't understand why this couldn't work out. They're retired for crying out loud. Ugh, but yeah, and it's like, fly into Chicago, you know, warm, sunny Chicago for a week and a half, Mom. It'll be a beautiful stay.
I think times are different in
1989.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Whalers out there, email me and be like, yo, you're crazy. My parents come over for 3 weeks for Christmas. You're an idiot. And I'm like, all right. I guess I haven't had a real Christmas yet. Friggin' Aunt Bethany and Uncle What's-His-Face don't show up till like Christmas Eve anyways. Why couldn't everybody else do that? They were
then
the
we wouldn't
nice
have
one.
A movie, RJ.
That's the whole point. What keeps the movie going along is the ridiculousness. And that's the thing. The grandparents don't even add that much to it. Like, they're there, and they're a bother, obviously, to them.
Oh, are you kidding me? They're the best. Lewis, he's on fire.
Well, no. Like, that's on Christmas Eve. And I'm talking about, like, the 10 days before Christmas Eve.
Oh.
The in-laws and Clark's parents are there. They don't even cause that much trouble. Like, they're just kind
they're
of
just
existing.
Annoying.
No, they're annoying.
They fall into, like, the classic family, like, both of the dads are asleep on the couch, and the moms are just, like, like they're upset and they're turning up the TV and like making a gingerbread house out of spite.
But that's the extent of their craziness. They're not like lighting things on fire. Like Clark is the one like falling out of trees and like
trying to light his house on lights. Yeah.
100,000 Italian lights or whatever. I can't remember the exact thing. But
there's not much else room in it for anything else besides him putting up his lights.
Yeah, so it's just this...
And annoying his neighbors.
And it's funny, once you start breaking it down, it's like, what the heck is going on in this story? But it's just so many lovable moments. Because like we said, it's so funny because it just hits on these classic Christmas traditions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea that, you know, you go out with the family to get your Christmas tree. Or, oh, we're all going to go outside and look at the lights. Or we're going to have this family meal. Or, you know, the family that you like, the family that you don't like. What drives you crazy? What doesn't drive you crazy? And poor Clark Griswold just gets driven insane.
That's really what it is. It's just a family showing up and everything goes wrong.
It's a slow burn for sure. Clark keeps a smile on his face for like 90% of the movie.
It's halfway like to insanity. Smile.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Kiss my ass. Kiss his ass. Kiss your ass.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
I think that is an integral part of this movie. It has so many one-liners. Like I feel like most of each scene culminates in a joke. I was watching a YouTube video from this YouTube channel I like to follow called Lessons from the Screenplay. Shout out to I don't know his name. Lessons from the Screenplay.
That's his full name.
That makes sense. Go follow him on Patreon. He's doing some cool stuff, but
we'll put him in the description for
sure. He did a video on Gone Girl, how writing screenplays, you know, a good scene should frame what it's about in the opening, you know, words, and then culminate into one line that is like the definition of the scene and then moves the plot forward, right?
Mm.
This movie does that.
Mm-hmm.
But with jokes.
Yeah.
Every scene is framed. Okay. Now there's like some futzy music going on and he's climbing up his ladder. And then that all culminates in him falling off the roof. Like everything is a big setup for the punchline at each end of the scene.
And that was one of the criticisms that John Hughes had about these films in general. He wrote all three of these, you know, the first three Vacation movies.
Did he write Vegas?
No.
Fact check.
Fact check. While I talk about this.
Excuse me, Frank. Frank, eye contact. Can you fact check that?
Thank you. So John Hughes's criticism was these movies have become no more than a vehicle for Chevy Chase and his success. So really, when you get to Christmas Vacation, it's they're crafting these scenes around Chevy Chase's comedic ability. So all these scenes are like, well, we could like have a Chevy like go make some Christmas lights and then he could just fall down the ladder a bunch. Like we could spend 5 minutes of him like stapling his arm to the roof and like the ladder falls and then like falls down. He's like, oh boy. And he's like totally fine. Like classic Chevy Chase. Like that's the scene.
What's that, Frank? Oh, it's not?
Thanks. Oh, he didn't write Vegas?
No.
All right. John Hughes only wrote those three, everybody.
Yep.
Write it down. Hope you're paying attention. There'll be a quiz after the podcast.
After the podcast?
Pencils down.
How is that possible? The podcast ends in...
Capítulo tres. Y nombre, si, uno y cuatro. My Spanish is
bilingual
a little shaky.
This
sorry
podcast.
About this. Yeah, you're right. You already started that.
But Chevy Chase is kind of hard to put in a box. Like, he's just going to do his thing. Like, he's so... built on improv and almost to his own fault. Like, isn't that how he like kind of didn't work out in SNL? He did season one of SNL, but then he didn't go on for much longer after that.
I think that's a lot more of ego and creative differences.
Oh.
But you know, there's a lot of things floating around the internet about whether, you know, why he left and what he didn't leave for. And you know, his whole career is tainted with people who have bad words about him. But I think at this point, like, He was the guy. Like, you give him a role because you want him to be slapstick. You want him to have, like, you know, he's, you know, a tall, good-looking, like, say the line, kind of straight man, family man, like, good smile. Like, everybody loves Clark Griswold. Great smile, witty, cheerful, and, you know, just wants to have a good time. But, yeah, he...
But it's coupled very much so with good writing. I mean, they put in there, you know, the scene will come to the one punchline, and I mean, is this the 100th time? How many times have we said it's all about
tiempo.
Timing. Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. En español. That's what it's all about. And they use that to their advantage. We talked last podcast about rim shots and how you can use, like in Scrubs, they use just a look to the camera or somebody kind of like bugging out as like a rim shot to let you know that was a joke and we're transitioning to a new scene. They do that with everything. One of the most masterful scenes that they use is Clark and Eddie talking about why the older cousins couldn't make it. Mm. He's like, well, he was busy barking for the yak woman. And as soon as he finishes that sentence, he spins the like little flame candle and it just bursts. It just falls apart. And like everything he touches just breaks. Ugh. But then it's like it's as he says those punchlines, barking for the yak woman, it just breaks. And then he goes, oh, I'll put the back together. And then he's saying something like, yeah, yeah, she's ugly as sin, but she's a hell of a cook. And then that makes Chevy like drop it again. And it's like so many times, even they use like in a different scene, Beverly D'Angelo like says, it's Christmas, we're all in misery, and then chops a cabbage in half.
Yeah.
It's like those little timings that they have. Like sometimes they literally use like a rim shot. Like when he plugs it in and nothing happens.
Yeah.
It all culminates. He's like, joy to the world. And then he plugs it in and it's literally the sound of cymbals crashing on the ground. It's
crickets like, riding tumbleweeds.
Yeah. And he's like, beautiful, Clark.
Beautiful Clark.
And that that scene has one of my favorite lines. He's like, his mother-in-law is saying, kids, let this be a lesson that this was a lot of hard work and nothing came out of it. And the daughter goes, well, he worked really hard, Grandma. And then his father-in-law goes, so do washing machines.
Oh, man. That's so messed up.
That's brilliant.
Oh,
that's so funny.
That is good. And it does such a good job of just, you know, getting those archetypal in-law roles of like the in-laws who just like are not super approving of their, you know, son-in-law.
Upping the family angst.
Yeah.
Just a temperature at a time. It's like just culminating into a massive meltdown by Chevy.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny too, because he doesn't really give any signs of the fact that he's breaking. But it's interesting because it all relies on what? His Christmas bonus.
Right.
I'm going to get the Christmas bonus and we're going to get the pool. Uh-huh. So that's kind of the thing keeping him at bay.
Well, he's relying on it. He already put the down payment down.
Right.
And it's like, it's a big source of stress for him. And then it doesn't come through. It's a jelly of the month club. And that is the straw that breaks the camel's back. And he just loses it.
And it's funny too, because it's almost as if there were no straws. And it was just this one thing. It could only be one straw that breaks. Because it's like he just kept mentioning it over and over and over again. And you know, scenes with him at the office. And, oh, I'm going to get the pool. He's got the daydream where he's staring at his family and the jewelry model. Yes. He's like, ugh, ugh.
That's classic Chevy Chase in the beginning when he's talking to her. And everything is just peppered with, oh, stores couldn't be any hotter than they already are. And it's literally line after line after line. It is a tit nipply out. I mean, I'm sorry, did I say nipple?
Golly. And he starts wiping his face with underwear. Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that really is vintage Chevy. That's charming, off the cuff, kind of like suave. Ugh. I love him in Three Amigos. I can't wait to do a podcast on Three Amigos. That's one of
that'll
my
be a good one.
Favorite classics.
That's loaded with comedy gold.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Steve Martin. Oh, Martin Short. Oh, sorry.
Chevy Chase. Ooh.
Where are we going with this? I just love those guys.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome.
Those are comedy legends.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the classics. So with this movie, it just is poor Clark going through his life, dealing with the crap, but you know, they do a great job milking all that physical comedy. That's you know, Chevy Chase's wheelhouse. There's a whole scene of him stuck right. in an attic, like just baseboards lying around that for some reason aren't like nailed down in
right.
the attic,
right.
and he's just stepping all over them, like,
because that's what you used to do when you had like that attic, which was actually like the roof of the house,
so you couldn't step.
You
on.
Had the boards in between. You would just lay one in between, and then you step on it to walk, so you don't fall through the roof of the house. But if that is not fully on it, it's like tilting, you step on the wrong spot. Like, that's a classic, almost Bugs Bunny-esque, like stepping on a rake,
yeah.
getting hit in the face.
He's like,
and it happens
like,
3 times
yeah.
in a row
yeah.
in a live action movie that's not Space Jam. Like, come on.
Yeah, and then he's like, oh, God, I gotta get to the window. And it's those like
yeah.
circular revolving windows, like squack, squack, quack, and just keeps hitting himself in the head. And he seems to feel no pain. Like, again, he takes on
he
a
does.
Lot of injuries, but we see no bruises, no scars, no bleeding.
That is one of my favorite parts. He falls off the roof, catching himself on the railing.
Rain gutter.
And then that sends the ice into the neighbor's yard. He falls back first into the bushes, and his wife comes out and goes, dinner's ready. And he goes, oh, I'm starving. She's like, what? Is he in the bush?
Not a scratch.
It's so good.
How is there water on the carpet? I don't know, Margo.
And why is the carpet wet, Todd? I don't know, Margo. Oh, my gosh. I could quote this movie until I'm dead.
And that you were just talking about how well they set up, you know, the rim shot, the
yeah.
of a lot of ending of scenes or like little bits. Almost every cutaway gag for the neighbors is that exact rim shot. You know, when he cuts down the tree and they're sitting there drinking like margaritas in like
right.
a dimly lit dining room. It's like, I don't know. I think I really want a tree. He's like, and where are we going to get a tree on Christmas Eve? Ghost tree falls in through their window.
Oh my gosh. One of my favorite is when he first brings home the tree. And he's like, oh, look at this idiot. He's not going to fit that in this house.
No. Yeah,
and he
yeah.
goes, hey, Griswold, what are you going to do with that tree? He goes, why don't you bend over and I'll show you?
And he goes, you got a lot of nerve talking to me.
Well,
like
you got
that.
A lot of nerve talking to me like that. I wasn't talking to you.
Well, and the best is, again, Chevy Chase's supreme suave delivery. I wasn't talking to you.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, he's not laughing.
Right.
He's just barely smiling through his teeth. I wasn't talking to you. End scene.
Which is way more offensive.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And it's just riddled with that, like, on the line. It's a good balance of, like, family comedy mm-hmm. and also, like, adult hilarity kind of stuff that kids shouldn't be saying
yeah.
on the playground.
But, like, then enter in the twist of the whole movie, right? Cousin Eddie.
I think I say Jelly of the Month Club.
That was later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cousin Eddie, a.k.a. Randy Quaid, pre-breakdown, before he was crazy, but yet it's Randy Quaid, so maybe he was always crazy.
Yeah. Well, and they do it such a funny way, too, because he's like, the lights are
he
up.
He just overcame the lights.
Hallelujah. Uh-huh. And he's like going up to the family, and he's like just so happy. He's like, oh. Mom, I'm so happy this worked out. He's going to his son. He's like, you guys, like, this is what Christmas is all about. I'm so happy. And he's like,
and Eddie,
oh, cousin Eddie, like, I'm so happy you're here for this.
What, Eddie?
Wait, what are you doing here? He's like, hey, Clark.
I was like, well, you guys went through a lot of trouble. I hope this wasn't on our account.
Oh, my gosh.
Our pride and joy snots.
I hate him. I just,
snots.
He just bothers me as a human.
He's not a human.
Well, the character is, yeah. Well, not
Snots.
Snots
is
no,
the dog.
Cousin Eddie, not the dog, dang it.
Got it.
Snots is a beautiful creature.
Right, Cousin Eddie is, yeah, he's the worst. He's supposed to be. He's uncomfortable. He's pushing that uncle, you know, family.
Just like that weird person that you're related to that not everyone's certain how exactly you're related to, but they just tag along with you for no reason at all, and you're kind of like, why are you here?
We all got him.
We all got him.
I'm looking at you, Doug.
Whoa. Hashtag called out.
Just kidding. But yeah, Cousin Eddie just kind of amps up the awkward, the funny, the crazy. Man, he's got an RV and he's dumping the septic tank.
That scene is actually really funny. He's holding the septic, just guzzling it out into the sewer, stogie in mouth, chugging a beer, which is very reminiscent of the Kramer, like, yeah. Here's to feeling good all the time. Yeah. Like, he's, like, seriously in a robe with, like, the right. little tracker hat on. Like,
oh, my gosh.
It's disgusting. That yeah. liquid looks gross, too.
Shitter was full.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Which, by the way, the neighbors, if you haven't seen this movie, the best way to describe the neighbors, they're just dark coats with little black glasses.
Right?
That's all you need to think about when you think of the neighbors. Yeah.
Glasses. Yeah, that's exactly. So good. But, so, yeah, Cousin Eddie just causes more and more tension as the movie goes on. We have that scene that we talked about earlier where he's just breaking everything he touches. There's another scene where they're shopping together, and he keeps putting on dog food on the cart.
18 bags.
Like, he puts on 3 bags in a row, and then Clark is like, they're having this conversation. They never miss a beat in the conversation.
No.
But he takes a packet of 4 light bulbs and puts it right on top as Cousin Eddie puts another one and just destroys the light bulbs.
Yes. And it's like seamless.
Yeah,
exactly.
Totally. And they just continue their conversation because that is a metaphor for what Clark is going through. He's being crushed under his family's crazy idiotness.
But the real gem of the family, which if you're a Christmas Vacation fan, it's the only reason you've come to listen to this podcast today is Aunt Bethany,
yes.
The gem of the Griswold family. So perfect.
Yeah.
Such a great character. And it's like, amidst all the craziness, what else, you know, Cousin Eddie, in-laws mm-hmm. going crazy, what else could you throw in? An old lady who can't remember anything and has got this high-pitched, squeaky voice, like, the blessing.
Yeah.
Grace died 30 years ago.
I love it. Her entrance is just riddled with,
are you still dating Clark?
Like,
is Russ in the Navy?
She has no idea.
Russ is 9 years old.
Oh, she wrapped up her damn cat.
Which, by the way, Frank, can you fact check what Russ's name is?
Russ?
Yeah.
Johnny Galecki?
Yeah, Johnny Galecki.
Yeah.
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He is just adult Johnny Galecki in a 9-year-old's body. He has all the same facial expressions. Like, he does the eye roll. Like,
it's the same actor.
It's the exact same character.
Oh, yeah, that's
he grows saying. Up and gets an apartment in Brooklyn or wherever they live. Friggin'
no, modern. they're in California. They're somewhere like Berkeley.
Yeah,
I think.
I hope nowhere close to us.
I think they are.
I don't like that show. I'm sorry,
Frank. Could you fact check that? No, you don't have to, Frank. Go away.
Aunt Bethany steals the show. I'm sorry. She does. And the prayer, which is the best part, she says the prayer, and it's the Pledge of Allegiance, which is so funny. And I was, you know, watching the film, obviously, in preparation, and I was thinking, I was going, you know, I guarantee you there is a good dozen of families that legitimately, for the Christmas prayer, say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Do it as a nod.
But not as a nod. Like, full on. Like, that's their prayer.
No.
I'm not kidding you. I bet you there is. And maybe it's because it started out as a joke, but then they're like, oh, you know what? This means a lot to me. Maybe not. I could be totally off base.
Sounds crazy.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm starting my own podcast. I'm going to go find those people and interview them.
That
what
makes
it means
sense.
Christmas traditions.
What is it called?
It's called, Why Am I American?
Why Am I Johnny Galecki?
Why Am I Johnny Galecki? The Big Bang Theory podcast. Yeah, and then she wraps the cat. She wraps the Jell-O. She's losing her mind.
So now there's a dog, a cat.
And the grand entrance of none other than...
Well, actually, before we get the squirrel, the cat dies.
The cat dies, yeah. Thank God.
He had 9 lives. He's done spent all of them right there.
Kevin Spacey goes straight through the floor. In a very animated style, like, you know,
yeah,
silhouette
all
the way down the, which is funny. I wanted to see the cat get electrocuted, but you just kind of hear it.
Well, because you think in cartoon, that's just the way you operate. Like,
I see the world as Muppets. Yeah. Just like Kenneth.
Like, you actually want him, the cat, to, like, go up in the air and you can, like, see the bone structure of the cat and it goes... But that's not what happened. It just goes...
Whoa! And everyone's like, whoa. Also, I remembered the turkey that they have for dinner is no joke the worst turkey I've ever seen in my entire life. Real, fictional, fake. It looks disgusting. It looks like it's filled with like the clay from Nightmare Before Christmas, like cobwebs. It's disgusting. It's like breathing at one point too. Like it's shooting out gas and everyone's just kind of like cool with it. It's like crispy.
So many people like the mom is like, because it's so dry, the mom is soaking it in her water. And Beverly D'Angelo is throwing it before she puts her fork in her mouth. Everyone's avoiding eating the dry turkey. Everyone's avoiding eating Aunt Bethany's cat jello. Ew. It has cat food in the jello. Oh
my she gosh. Loves the jello.
So all of this culminates to he doesn't get his Christmas bonus.
Gets Jelly of the Month Club.
And he loses his mind. He just needs some eggnog, and then he just goes on a big rant about how he wishes his boss was here. Which, incidentally, when I was growing up, I watched this movie all through growing up.
That's why you're so messed up.
Mm-hmm. And my parents, even though there's only like two real cuss words in that scene, they would like to amp it up and they would just mute like every other word. So I used to think that that was like just all cuss words in that scene. But so growing up, I would always just hear, you know what I wish? I wish I could have my boss right here with a big bow on his head. And I would tell him what a brainless weep, son of a weep, goodness
weep, weep, like, weep.
Hallelujah! Holy weep! Where's the Tylenol?
Where's the Tylenol?
That's all I would hear.
Which that's like, that sentence probably is what I would say the summation of the film. Alleluia. Holy shit.
Where's the Tylenol?
That's the tagline if they needed one for the movie. New York Times says, Alleluia. Holy shit. Where's the Tylenol?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and Cousin Eddie follows through, brings back the boss, kidnaps him, really weird, and then somehow, like, the boss is cool with it. Bill Murray's brother's, like, really cool, and he's like, oh, actually, I'm not mad that you kidnapped me. Actually, you get a 20% Christmas bonus, which could be humongous. That could be, like, $10,000, maybe $20,000, depending on how much he's making.
Well, no, that's not what he says. He says, whatever you got for your Christmas bonus last year and add 20%.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was 20. Oh, whoa. That's really big.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks for fact checking me on that, man. Because in my mind, I was thinking like that could be like $20,000, but that definitely could be like $20,000.
Yeah.
For reals. Wow. He got like three pulls out of that gig.
But it just goes to show that every scene culminates in a joke. It's all, you know, him freaking out just leads to Cousin Eddie going and getting his boss, bringing him there with the bow on his head. And it's just like, it's just this big, ridiculous joke where he's like, what? You cut bonuses? Like, that's terrible. And then the cops come busting in and everyone has to freeze.
The windows break an eighth time for the same night.
That's what my wife said. She was like, how many windows break in this movie? She has really high care.
They're just
for windows.
Cutting to different windows breaking around the neighborhood. It had nothing to do with what was happening in that scene.
But yeah, so it's all just ends up as one big joke where the cops bust in and he realizes that he cut the bonuses. And one of my other favorite lines is the cop goes, you cut Christmas bonuses? Well, that's cold. If I had a rubber hose.
Oh my gosh. And then Uncle, you know, lights the stogie outside, sends the Santa sleigh.
That ain't like, the freaking Christmas star.
No. And then, you know, the movie ends, which is weird. It's just Clark sitting outside and is just by himself. His whole family goes in, and it's like, it's not like a freeze frame.
Right.
He's just standing there outside.
Just taking it all in.
Yeah. If you would have subbed out the music with, like, the Charlie Brown Christmas Time is Here, it'd be a really sad ending.
Right.
I'll redub it.
His
and
last,
put it on
his last, not his last line is, "I did it."
Yeah,
like I think he thinks that was successful, but I don't think his measure of success is very accurate.
Again, the whole movie centered around whether or not he was getting his bonus. So he did it. He got his bonus. That's all he wanted.
No, he wanted a successful Christmas,
and it was not a success by any means.
So he didn't do it.
Right. So why did he say he'd do it?
That's because what I'm saying.
It he wasn't didn't do it. He wasn't saying I did it as in a good Christmas. He said I did it. I got the bonus. That's all he wanted.
No, no, no. That's not all he
He's
wanted.
He's a greedy son of a gun. That's all he wanted. No. He didn't want Christmas.
He's a
magic.
Family man. Oh, he wanted the pool. He wanted to give them the pool for Christmas.
He wanted the jewelry. Model okay. By the pool.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a new segment we like to call RJ and Ben are wrong.
Ding, 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 ding.
RJ is wrong.
Fight!
I win.
Oh, okay. You're wrong.
I win. You're wrong.
Okay. yeah. Anyways.
There you go. That's Christmas Vacation, ladies and gentlemen. You know what that means. It's that time of the show that we like to call Ben's Wacky Facts.
Wacky. Christmas edition.
Oh. Christmas Vacation edition. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the part of the show where I, Ben, say some wacky facts and RJ rates them by putting them on the athletic baseball field.
There's only one type. A baseball field, that
oh,
is.
Oh, it could be. A, yeah, that's okay. Maybe like Little League. here we go. Here's the first wacky fact. While the movie is called Christmas Vacation, the movie actually never gets to Christmas. It actually ends on Christmas Eve.
Spoiler alert.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Alerts have been spoiled.
That is wacky. It does end on Christmas Eve night.
Like you don't actually ever see any part of Christmas Day.
Ugh.
Which
that's
I
so
never
perfect.
Really put together. Like I think I just assumed that was Christmas Day.
It's just too much Christmas. Wow. Well, that's pretty wacky. That's you know what that is? That's, you know, Clark Griswold up to bat, goes to hit a sweet, sweet home run, and hits it line drive over the fences, and they're like, oh, guess what? It was never a home run. You hit a home run yesterday. Oh, wait, what?
It's a Twilight Zone yeah. home run. All right, that's like six home runs. Well, thank you for those home runs.
Yeah.
Here we go. Here's wacky fact number two. The movie that Rusty watches on the TV is Frank Capra's perennial Christmas classic, It's a Wonderful Life. His grandson, though, Frank Capra III, served as Christmas Vacation's assistant director.
Oh.
So multiple Christmas classics directed by a grandfather and a grandson.
That's magical.
With the same name.
That's a classic fancy ball player up to bat, and he's ready to hit a good homer. And then what's that? The coach? Oh, coach! He's calling somebody out of the dugout. It's some old man. Oh, it's the player's grandfather. And together, the grandfather and son hold the bat together in like some kind of hug around each other and hit a home run together.
Do you know who the players are?
The Cincinnati Bengals.
You and your grandfather.
Why?
Because you're a third.
Oh, okay.
Like, can you imagine if your grandfather had a podcast called Christmas Laughter?
Well, he was Spanish, so it'd be like, you know, lo que es mi laughter. I can't. My Spanish is so rusty. Which is funny because we've been doing Spanish bits all day. But I think, honestly, if I had a Spanish podcast, it'd be que sorpresa. Que es un sorpresa. What is a surprise?
What is a surprise?
Oh, I think I said that right. Spanish listeners, you can tell me how bad my Spanish is. That's
all right,
fine.
Here we go. Here's Spanish wacky fact number three. The production originally had trained a squirrel for the scene where it wreaks havoc on the house. Unfortunately, the squirrel died the day before the scene was shot.
No.
So the production used an untrained squirrel in the final film.
It's so good. That's so wacky. That's really wacky.
That's nuts.
I don't even have to say how wacky of an analogy that is. Like, that's
because it just is wacky.
But why do you spend so, like, spent time and money to train a squirrel or find some guy who has trained a squirrel. And then he just dies. Like, all right, well, there's one outside. Grab that. No, that one. Get that one. They just grab him, bring him in. All right, now, squirrel, listen here. It's a really easy gig. We'll give you $500 at the end of the day. Just run around the house, chase the dog, get on Chevy Chase's back. It's easy. You walk off set, and you know what? Under the table cash. Really easy. And the squirrel did a great job. Like, it's not like I watch that movie and I'm like, man, this guy was trained. Like, who cares?
But what do you expect? Squirrels don't have understudies.
This is the wacky fact rating. It's the guy up to bat who's literally like a 2-year-old with like a bat, like it barely lifted up, and everyone's like, oh, this guy's never gonna hit a home run.
Where are you going with this? Is the 2-year-old gonna die?
No, the 2-year-old hits a home run. Oh, okay. Like, he's not supposed to do that. Like, I don't know. Congrats to the untrained squirrel.
Yeah.
You're really great.
Super nuts. Anyway. Wordplay. That's the wacky facts for the week. I hope you liked them. That means it's hashtag whale mail of the week.
Ooh. Christmas whale mail of the week.
Ooh.
Well, it's not Christmas, but I mean, it is.
It is Christmas. It's not themed Christmas.
Yeah.
Got it.
No one sent any Christmas-themed emails. Blah, blah, blah. But we got a sweet email this week. It reads, hey guys, enjoy your conversations. You are a perfect distraction from my normal life and work. Our favorite comedy show is ABC's Modern Family. We always enjoy it. We sometimes laugh out loud, and we periodically talk about how funny highlights with friends. But we have never lost it and fallen off the couch in streaming tears from a funny bone hit until last season's episode, A Man Shouldn't Lie. Whoa. I watched that episode because of this. But they said, yeah, we all fell off the couch, uncontrollable laughter, crying, snorting. And I've never experienced that kind of temporary psychological breakdown in a comedy moment. Guys, help me understand, why am I laughing? Ron. Wow.
From Tustin.
Wow, Russin and Tustin.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I like how he spells out what we need to do. Why is he laughing?
A lot of our emailers are really good at really telling us exactly what to what say needs to and do.
Take place.
It doesn't take a lot of work here. I literally watched A Man Shouldn't Lie from Modern Family.
Yeah.
Wasn't that hard to find on the interwebs. Pretty classic episode. I mean, I can't even believe it's been around for this long. Like 8 seasons now. Good grief.
It's funny.
It is funny.
It's scripted funny. Like, they do a good job. I think they keep it up.
I would just watch a show with Phil Dunphy, though.
Yeah.
Like, just Phil Dunphy. A prequel trilogy of Phil Dunphy.
You can't do it.
In college. The college years. It's called Workaholics. Anyways, yeah, so I watched this clip. Basically, Cam wants to fills in for the drums for this band that's a Christian rock band.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, there's obvious hints throughout the episode that this is a Christian rock band. And he gets on the stage and he starts doing the drums and, you know, the song starts. And the chorus starts up, and the guys are like, a man shouldn't lie, a man shouldn't lie. And then, like, you know, Cam's getting all into it. He's like, And then, a man shouldn't lie with another man. And, like, Cam's like, oh, no. And it's a really funny moment that I realized, because we know this is a Christian band.
Right.
So obviously, you know, they're just going to sing a song about, you know, whatever sin or, you know, Christian themes. So they're talking about lying, obviously. Right. A man shouldn't lie. But the, you know, ultimate
twist
is they're actually talking about their Christian stance against homosexuality. And Cam is on there on the drums with actually Mitch, who's like got the tambourines on the side. And they're like, and Cam's still on the drums.
He immediately bails.
No, yeah. Mitch bails. Cam's in there on the drums. And he's like, oh, it's okay. Jesus loves you regardless of your sexuality. Like, he's singing out loud, like, filling in, like, what the heck are you doing? So it's just
so good, because the audience and Cam figure this out at the same time.
Yeah, us, the audience.
So, yeah, you literally see his amazement as he's like, oh, no. Oh,
I've made a huge mistake.
What have I gotten myself into? And he's playing. He can't just pick up and leave. which it ends up being a train wreck, but he's just like so ridiculous. He just chimes in. He goes, "Unless they love each other."
It's so good. And it's just, this is just a very classic Modern Family joke, yes, of the betrayal. But I love this clip especially. It's so funny because it's, you think you know where they're going with this joke, but just boom, they pull the rug out from under you.
Right.
So, literally, like you said, you realize it as Cam's realizing it.
It's just another classic. It's like there's a couple layers. It's another classic, depiction of betrayal. Mm-hmm. You get the joke, but you also get to experience somebody who would be uncomfortable hearing that joke forced into a situation, yeah, that they have to participate.
Yeah.
And you feel the joke and you feel the uncomfortableness. Yeah. And that just like culminates into watching him just fall apart.
I think we hit a world record. Congratulations, Ben Harris. Culminates Dozen Timer Club. Congratulations. Here's your award today.
Thanks, everyone. I'm out. Here we go.
I'm going to Disney World. No, I literally just noticed that I think you might have said it like three times, but it's good. Congrats.
Thanks. Well, that culminates our podcast.
Feliz Navidad.
And that satiates the culmination of the satiates.
Whoa. What?
Remember that one?
Predilections?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you, Ron, from Tustin, for writing in. Yeah. We appreciate you.
Yeah, that was awesome. So, yeah, if you guys want to talk to us about your favorite episodes and want to do a little mini breakdown of why that's funny, I enjoyed it. I didn't watch that episode until we got this email, so it was a good laugh.
And it was a funny episode.
Yeah.
So, RJ, where can people find us?
You can always find our podcast on the iTunes podcast app, Google Play, or Stitcher. Be sure to check out our Twitter page, @WhalePod, our Facebook page, Why Am I Laughing? And don't forget to email us at whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com. Send us anything. We've had videos. We've had requests. We've had weird questions about our personal life that we just really have tried to avoid, but I guess we're going to have to read eventually.
Pancake face.
Yeah, the pancake face. That's a weird episode.
But if you want to follow RJ on Twitter, you get to. You just got to go to Rodolfo, @TheRodolfoBrown. At Rodolfo the Brown.
Yeah, and follow Ben. You can find him at Cam Newton Fig Newtons.
I like to change it up every week.
Yeah, he's working on some new stuff.
Again, thank you so much to Ben Sound for making our theme musics. And thank you for listening. If you like the show at all, rate us on iTunes, tell a friend, or do both at the same time.
Ooh, simultaneously.
Because you could win stuff, and that's not a joke.
Yeah, we're doing that Puffy Paint t-shirt giveaway 2016. Honestly, we already have like 8 ratings on iTunes. If we get to up to 20, we'll give all those people Puffy Paint shirts. So we're getting close. If you just literally go to iTunes, Why Am I Laughing, rate how many stars? Hopefully 5, I would guess. I mean, it's the easiest number to remember.
Out of 50.
Yeah, and then we'll find a way to get you a shirt. I promise.
It's gonna be the best shirt you've ever worn. Next week we're gonna be talking about top 10 funniest movies of 2016. Bottom 10 funniest movies of 2016. It's gonna get wacky. It's gonna get crazy. We're gonna be talking about it. You won't want to miss it.
So true.
But ladies and gentlemen, we would like to leave you with what we always say. This podcast is all about
Tylenol.
Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.